the NFL Podcast. Guarantees Jibber Jabber.
Welcome to the Big Tech Podcast, your home for microchips, modems, and other big tech stuff. My name is Dan Hansis, coming to you from a virtual room. Virtual Big Tech. Follow the dots of heroes. Greg Rosenthal, Mark Sessler. What's up, boys?
Well, I'm glad you've revealed some of the findings from our latest board meeting. We do believe the future of big tech is in modems. Modems are hot right now. Just that's it. It's all about the modem.
Well, the secret is it's the next wave of modems. Everyone's, you know, right now 56K is hot, but what happens when you get up to, you know, 95K? That's where we're going.
Well, that's why we're cutting edge, and I do find it an interesting life scenario. In the future, if the NFL were to melt down entirely, the three of us or four of us or five of us would join some random corporation in like central Iowa and just immediately start a podcast talking about modems and screws and dashboards.
Well, listen, I've done my research as an enterprising middle-aged businessman here, and I just realized I might have made a huge mistake because the NFL owns the Around the NFL podcast name. By uttering it on this show, is that also the property of 345 Park Avenue and Roger Goodell? Did we just line the pockets again of Big Corp?
Well, they own everything, so yes, you know, emphatically yes.
They own. If we have another child, they own that. They own whoever we're going to hire to help us because. You know, we're like idea men, very creative and everything. Mm-hmm. When I think of the four of us with Wes too, and I'll throw Ricky in there. I don't think like tech savvy is like the number one first thing that comes to my mind.
Well, that's why we launched Big Tech, because the most important thing to success is just a hunger to learn and get better. So that's our company is just starts here and then it just goes like that.
Right. We see it through the eyes of the everyman. You know, not the nerd. So I'm with you.
And Greg, that was a little bit of creeping pessimism in big tech. We won't have that. This is like Silicon Valley 1997. There's a lot of optimism. There's big, cushy offices, windows everywhere, open space. So just we got to have that right attitude.
There's just like bitcoins falling from the ceiling.
You're missing one key ingredient, and it's white and it's sugary, and it comes in big bags.
Yes, many sugar cookies.
I kind of take a little bit of offense to that when you're like tech savvy doesn't really. I'm the one that got all of NFL Network.
I guess I was thinking more like
this pandemic. I got Good Morning Football online. I got TA online. The network, like, come on.
She's right.
I was thinking more like the back end, like programming and stuff was more.
Bro, you don't know my life.
But you have to understand, like that. Whenever Greg sets up anything like that, you know he's about to insult somebody. It was your turn there, and you just sometimes you just gotta wear it. But good for you for coming back at him on it.
Thanks. I mean, we're just colleagues, not friends, so I don't really take it personally.
It'll probably be your turn next time too.
One thing I have learned is people take things more personally, and I've tried to learn that in my 40 years that not everyone, you know, sometimes just for the sake of a joke. You can't take it personally.
I mean, you can.
Greg, it seems
you're
like
telling
he's
us
learned,
we can't, but you can. So.
And he is improving on the empathy scale. All right, here we go. Let's get into it. Big show today. We have a guest, Mike Garofalo. We love that guy. Is as plugged in as it gets. One of the top insiders, not just at our company, but the whole industry. And he's a good dude. And he's from Hoboken. So what else do you need? He's going to join us on the show a little bit later. I think we'll preview Steelers-Ravens. For a trifecta here? Why not?
Do it again.
Done the last two shows. Why not do it a third time? Why not? Mark?
Yes. I mean, look, I think we're rounding into form with each of these previews, and our pinpoint precision will be felt by the listener this third time.
I think it would be fun to preview Ravens Steelers every show for the rest of the season. Like, even if the game does happen, just preview it.
I like the idea that we preview it so many times that we reach a higher plane of intelligence and we just know everything that happened before the game is played. We're one preview away from that, so we can't stop now. But before any of that, we do have to get to the penultimate game on the Week 12 schedule. It went down in Philly, Seahawks, Eagles. Let's check it out.
And from the 16, here comes a three-man rush and a handoff, and it goes off to Carson. Got a block at the 10, runs on the numbers, the 5, breaks a tackle, carries a defender, digging, turning, driving, touchdown! Wow, what a run! He's a bulldozer! He's a beast! Big-time run! Carson with a 16-yard sledgehammer touchdown run for the Seahawks.
He's the best.
Kevin Harlan. Kevin Harlan. Kevin mother Harlan. Westwood won. Chris Carson made it count. His long run of the game, 16 yards, and he found the end zone, adding a little balance to the Seahawks offense, and it paid off, a 23-17 win over the Philadelphia Eagles, who continue to scuffle on offense. They got a Vegas desert-destroying Hail Mary at the end of the game to make this thing look respectable, but Mark, this game was one-sided. Seattle beat him on both sides of the ball.
Yeah, I don't often do this, but I spent the morning listening to 94 WIP Whip in Philly just to get a little taste of the aftermath. And
pissed off, Angelo.
Are the Browns too successful now, so you need to find another
way? He's loving this Carson Wentz, Carson Wentz downfall. Remember all those texts in 2016 when he thought the Browns blew it by not taking Wentz? He's loving this.
Okay, makes
sense. It's an unprecedented slide, and I don't think it's all on Carson Wentz. I mean, he's the quarterback. He's going to get destroyed, in this scenario on social media. But he has like a historical QB rating drop off this season from the combined seasons before. I mean, their offense to me looked lost, passing game wise, against one of the worst pass defenses in the league. And I thought it was instructive. You know, Doug Peterson after the game, the one thing they were talking about on WIP over and over, obviously, was Jalen Hurts and the dynamic of the promises and Ian Rappaport suggesting that we'd see more of Jalen Hurts. He played 2 snaps. He's played more in games in October. And they asked Doug Peterson after about it, and he said, well, it's not about one guy. He said, we had breakdowns across the board, and it doesn't really matter who's back there. And I question the flexible thinking or the creativity of the Eagles and where they are, because it just seems to me that the same questions are being asked by a very, I think, agitated group of beat writers who are suffering through a rough campaign, and a coach who's suffering through a rough campaign, and a quarterback. And it's like, enough with the Eagles being projected as, you know, NFC East titleists. They've got a lot to figure out and massive looming questions heading into the offseason. Seattle did not look their best, but they snuck a win out of here against a team in disarray.
Yeah, they looked fine. You know, their defense is getting a little better. Jamal Adams is doing his thing. Chris Carson makes a huge difference. But the most telling part of the broadcast to me was some of the analysts from Greasy and Riddick, and it gets to what you were talking about with Wentz when they said late in the game that Peterson didn't necessarily want Hurts. It rang some bells. Because, first of all, you can look at the loyalties there. Greasy sticking up for the quarterback. These guys are football guys. Lewis Riddick used to work for Howie Roseman, has disparaged him publicly, which I think it would have been better to disclose at some point while he was disparaging him last night too. This goes back, you know, years and years, because they were sort of on opposite sides of the organization years ago. And so that really rings a bell. And then I think about Ian Rappaport's report about how Hurts is going to play more. And I'm not trying to guess where these things are coming from, but when things like this happen, I think it's a schism. You know, I think it's maybe the front office and the coach not being on the same page. And when these things start coming out, it's almost like, and we've seen this in Philadelphia, by the way, before, you start thinking, okay, this group, which has won a Super Bowl together, is starting to come apart a little bit. And there's maybe the Peterson side, and there's the front office. And you do wonder, is only one of those two sides going to survive? Are either side going to survive? We really have no idea, but I think we've hit that point of the season.
Lurie seemed annoyed looking at his face last night
He typically, I mean, he kind of look. I feel like owners always look like that in the box.
And then he's got a mask project. On. It's a lot yeah, to ask.
We project that the owner's angry because he's just sitting there. Owners in general don't move around a lot. They just sit there and the money shine is all over them. And the mask also. So I don't want to read too much into that, although they did by saying he didn't go to the Cleveland game the last week, which was read into, I guess, in Philadelphia as a potential sign of his frustration with the team. It was the first game Lurie had missed since he bought the team. But yes, Riddick is the former Eagles director of pro personnel. There was the talk about Jalen Hurts getting snaps, and there was criticism in the broadcast. If you're going to put him in for a series, which there's logic to that, but also it could have just as easily been a ruse by the Eagles to try to get Seattle to have to game plan for a second quarterback. That wouldn't surprise me either. And this kind of gets back to, and Seahawks fans, we'll get to your team as well. This, to me, gets back a little bit to a conversation we had last week. I think when the team struggles the way it has, the head coach certainly deserves blame. But Carson Wentz missed so many throws yesterday. He missed not just throws, but reads. And Alshon Jeffrey streaking down the sideline was one that comes to mind. But stuff in the seams and then the accuracy issues. At one point, he threw low to one of his running backs, and he visibly lifted his arms like, bring the pass up. And that was a throw that he missed someone on the outside. It's so hard for me to kill the coaching staff, the scheme, when the quarterback is so out of sync and obviously in a total funk mentally and physically.
Right, which is why I think unless Hurts is a total disaster or Sudfeld, you know, is another guy who's been on that roster for a while. I don't know. I think
maybe it's
do think changing it up for a game is not, you know, makes sense because you said it. Like, you can make all the excuses and, you know, Orlovsky, who's been a big Wentz supporter, went through all the reasons why he thinks the offense is failing him. But I keep coming back to, like, the ball doesn't go where Wentz aims it.
No.
I've always thought that was a problem with him. But now it's like they're also not using his athleticism. That's where you can get on the coaches, maybe. But, like, it doesn't go where he wants it to go. So I don't know. How can you get past that?
I went back and watched just a little bit of remember this game in 2017, I believe we had Colleen on after. It was a Monday Night Football game that we did what we're doing here. We unpacked the Eagles, and it was Carson Wentz frying Washington. And he was, you know, they were 6-1 after that game. He looked like an MVP. Everything that we're saying about him now, we were not saying about him then. I mean, he was... That's when I was texting you guys late at night thinking, like, the Browns might have completely botched this because he looks like a hero in the making. And so I'm with you, Dan, that you can't just point to the coaching staff. You can't just point just to the quarterback. But the overall, like, soup is distasteful right now. And so I'm with Greg. I don't know who survives out of this. Carson Wentz's salary suggests that he survives. And if you play Hurts and he brings a lot of energy and electricity, let's say you play him for a quarter, they go up 14-0. You have opened up Pandora's box that goes deep into the offseason. So I wonder if there's hesitation to allow that to happen.
I mean, I just hope Wentz is prepping as much as Mark is for these shows, listening to WIP, going back to 2017. Someone is getting an MVP coin January.
The Eagles are 3-7-1 now. So if Doug Peterson intends to somehow still win the NFC East, he's probably thinking long and hard now whether to give Hurts a shot. But again, there's more to that too. How does Hurts look behind the scenes? The media hasn't had a good look at practices this year. All right, on the Seattle side of things, pretty much what you expected. DK Metcalf is at that level as a player, 10 for 177 in this game, where he is just such a headache and such a phenomenon, really. When it comes to being a playmaker, he's just at the top of the league right now, and just credit to the entire organization for scouting him the way they did. You remember during the combine when we had it on video, when he took his shirt off to meet Pete Carroll in Indianapolis, and Pete Carroll took his shirt off, and obviously
I thought to myself, is that Connor Orr? No, it's DK Metcalf.
Exactly. Connor's body is hot right now. And they obviously scouted him right, went and got him, I believe, in the second round of that draft, and now look where he is. And with Chris Carson and Carlos Hyde, that's a nice combination. The offense is fine. The defense, obviously, is the story now around them because it seems to be improving.
Yeah, and a lot of that, I think, is schedule-related, but that's how it goes. And they've looked okay enough, I thought, 3 of the last 4 weeks anyways. They just need to be average. To me, that's their recipe, is being a Chiefs like team or a 2016 Patriots type of team where you have one of, if not the best offenses in the league at its best and an okay defense. And your boy Adams, who, you know, you get on Clowney, for instance, for, you know, just getting pressures, not getting sacks. For all the some criticism the Seahawks have taken for the Adams trade, he has 8 sacks in 7 games. He has 27 pressures. The next closest defensive back has 12. So it reminds me of that Greg Williams comment. They're not going to know how to use him. It's like they're using him just fine in this role. I know he's not like the best coverage guy or whatever, but he is productive.
Right. It's funny. And I agree with you. I thought the same thing because he's the rare guy on defense that you always know where he is because he's always around the ball. And I think the only way to try to negate him in the game plan is not be what the Eagles are, which is this kind of this formless offense that can't protect the quarterback. Adam, that plays right into Adam's hands. He got to live near the line of scrimmage. You got to get Adams out in coverage to try to expose where he's not so great. So when he is, I still, you know, 2 first round picks is still pretty steep for a safety, but he has given them obviously a big lift on defense. I never thought he was going to be a bust for them, obviously. I miss him. But he was also, let's be honest, he was a bit of a pain in the ass. So,
well, I think for the Jets, I think you have to say, you know, and I was critical of the move because of the like the overall cultural side of it, but they've gotten good value for a player that would have meant nothing to them this season. So that's fine. I loved it. Our friend Bo Wolf called Metcalf a unicorn because that's what he is. I was like, what does this guy remind me of when I'm watching him play? It's kind of like when families used to get together and do things outside in America, like on Thanksgiving, for instance, and you'd have like the family football game and there'd be like the one kid who's like suddenly like a gigantic 19-year-old trying to get tackled by like 9-year-old girls. Like, I mean, you know, right. I will give Darius Slay credit for like what he said after the game. He was a total mensch about it. He took total accountability. I think part of this idea of like trying to put, whether it's a shutdown corner or not, one human being on DK Metcalf or one human being on Tyreek Hill on Sunday, like, let's stop doing this. There's got to be a better way to go about this. I mean, they were very physical with DK Metcalf.
I mean,
to the point where like they were penalized for how much they were roughing him up. And that was the first quarter of that game was a street fight.
I mean, it was a bad job by Jim Schwartz telling him he's not Megatron yet before the game, which I guess is true, but that's the closest comp.
Well, did you read the full comment, though?
Right. I mean, he wasn't trying, but the players are going to take any motivation that they can. It's probably true, but he's getting there. You know, the two closest comparisons I would say are David Boston and Megatron, and I think the difference between those two is you can tell with Metcalf, he's already put in the work. His route running and the smoothness with which he gets in and out of his breaks, stuff like that, is already seems way better than it was as a rookie.
Well, and Pete Carroll called him the Mandalorian, which is a reference completely lost to the two of you, but it made sense to me.
Nothing. Doesn't ring a bell at all.
I mean, it's nice. It's nice to see Star Wars after a string of
weeks
cash making. Oh, I was going to say, you know, misfires creatively. I mean, they're printing money, but that they've made something that people actually like. So that's nice. After
you're right, Craig. That's a good reaction.
All right. Joining us now.
Wake up, Garofalo.
I'm texting.
Joining us now, that's what they do. That's what the insiders do. Even when they're on camera, they're allowed to look at their phone and do phone things.
It's written in our contract.
He is, of course, a reporter for NFL Network. He is Ricky.
He's Ricky?
I'm Ricky.
Oh,
there we go.
A reporter for NFL Network. Co-host, GMFB Weekend. Distant cousin of Jimmy Garoppolo, maybe. He is Mike Garofalo. Welcome to the show.
I must say, my Twitter profile picture is a picture of me and Jimmy Garoppolo, and my header is me and Carson Wentz. So I guess you don't want to show up anywhere on my Twitter profile.
Where's Sam Darnold in this profile?
Right.
Mike, you are obviously plugged in on all this stuff like crazy, and the Steelers Ravens situation, now we're getting the game on Wednesday. Mm-hmm. And is this a game definitely going to happen? Let's start there.
I believe so. I can't lean on the table, it shakes the camera. Yeah, I believe so. And there's a look, and the Titans situation was a bit of a fiasco at times, but the NFL was pretty good about spotting, hey, when we're going to come out of this 5-day incubation period. Incubation is the word that I keep forgetting on air that I want to access, and I just got it there. So I'm really happy about that.
On the biggest platform possible. So there you
the
go.
The 5-ish day incubation period. And they were pretty good about, all right, we're out of it. We might have a couple of stragglers, but we're working our way out of it. And so that's where they feel they are with this Ravens situation, and that's why the game is going to be played or scheduled to be played and should be played. So, look, there's a lot of different things that come into this with what's happening in Denver and what happened with San Francisco a couple of weeks ago. But I would say that the NFL, from a medical standpoint, was pretty good about how they handled the Titans situation and also this Ravens situation, or so at least it seems right now.
Yeah, I don't understand why Denver especially is like, well, how come you're delaying this game? Or even, you know, Steelers fans are upset. Yeah. How come you're delaying this game? John Harbaugh keeps putting the game off. And it's like, it seems pretty clear to me what the differences are. Well, believe me, the NFL is not trying to lose money. They are trying to get this thing in as much as possible. They have forced these games. They are only doing it when it's like absolutely irresponsible to be playing the games. And people can even argue about that. So like if the game's being delayed, believe me, they're trying not to have it be delayed.
They did not want to cancel the primetime game on Thanksgiving.
Right. Right.
Not in the plans. And by the way, the only good game that
and
day.
And this Thursday night's game, too, is gone, too, because of that. They knew that.
Dez Bryant's revenge game against the Cowboys, and they want to move that? No, they want it right where it was supposed to be. So that, and I'm not trying to, apologize for what's happening here, but, you know, that's one thing. The other thing that frustrates people, and I get it, is that the Ravens are kind of being rewarded because their situation was worse than the Broncos situation. I mean, that's what it comes down to. It's kind of goofy, but it's kind of how it goes. And listen, they're still going to be shorthanded. They didn't have a normal practice week by any stretch, and they're going to get hit by the league in some form or fashion, I'm sure. So, you know, there are repercussions at least.
What would it take, Mike, for us to end up with the 16-game playoff schedule? Would it take a cancellation, two cancellation? What is your vibe on that for this to actually shift into a different setup for the NFL schedule?
Theoretically, it's just one that matters, right? If there's one game that has a team finishing at 9-6 while another team's at 9-7 and you go, oh, yeah, hold on, which one's supposed to get in because the other team didn't play the game, then that's how they would iron that out and say, okay, we'll just let the eighth team in, which, by the way, then you could have the ninth team saying, well, hey, what about us? You know, I just, there's no perfect plan to take care of that, number one. And number two, if it is just one game, they'll find a way to get it in, you would think. So it would take, theoretically, a couple of games that you're missing that have an impact on the standings. If the Jets game against the Patriots doesn't get played and the Patriots are out of it, that's not going to factor into
Jets won't go 0-16 then either. So that doesn't sound too
bad. They would make history at 0-15. I mean,
nobody's done that.
I have a personal, like, this would affect all four of us personally. Do you think, like, the same way sort of post 9/11, they enacted a lot of rules that never really went away, that the NFL, the way that the media works right now, where, you know, under Corona's, reign, where it's all Zoom meetings, there's a lot less, people inside the building, which I would imagine teams love. Journalists are far away. No more, you know, when is the next time we're ever going to be back in buildings? Or will they shut that down for good? Because I'm wondering if will we ever be in these, like, 30-person sweaty journo scrums trying to interview a coach. I could see that just never happening ever again.
Tell us about opening night.
You guys are unbelievable because I always, before I come on, think about something that I want to talk about. And this is something I've wanted to talk about for weeks now.
Wow.
And you brought it up, and I'm glad you did.
Platform.
Because I want to make this clear to anybody who's got any kind of influence over these things that's watching right now, and we know that there's a lot of them because that's where influential people come right here.
Mm-hmm. It's listening. It's a podcast, ultimately.
But I miss
cut this for you if you want.
That's fine. I miss access, and I miss access on Sundays. And this is not some kind of First Amendment. I demand my access to my kick returner and gunner. No, that's not what it's about. It's about on Mondays of normal game weeks. Think about how many stories come out of post-game locker rooms And how many storylines the next day that you're talking about. A lot of times you didn't even know about. Just a good question is asked and a player reveals something and it comes out and then you kind of dissect it all. There's a dearth of that kind of stuff right now because there's no access on Sundays. So once it's safe again, if the NFL or teams think that limiting access, boy, this has been great. That would be a disservice to fans, to players who deserve to have their stories told, to organizations, to people in the media. And I miss it so much because so much comes out of Sunday locker rooms and we just don't have it right now. And I really have a hole in my soul because of it.
Okay. But do you think the players actually miss it?
Not the majority of them, I'd say, but right. I think that there's a minority that understand. Think of it this way. I don't know that we've heard from Jalen Hurts since training camp. I thought about that last night. Right. The Eagles haven't made him available. I could be wrong. Maybe he did one at some point and I missed it. But what's going through that guy's head? Don't you want to know? I mean, we keep asking Wentz about it and Doug Peterson and all the other guys. I'd love to, he deserves to have his say on the matter. And listen, he could easily say to the, hey, I want to be available and I want to talk and whatnot. But, and again, maybe he has, but I haven't seen enough of it. There are some guys who realize, enough guys who realize, having access to the media and access to the fans, despite the fact that you have your own channels to speak, is a good thing.
It'll be interesting. I, realize some of these owners own Premier League teams and they've kind of gone to the no locker room, very, very little access policy, and has not hurt the bottom line. So it wouldn't surprise me if they change some things. Speaking of access, I want to ask about someone who I feel like has used his relationships, whether it's in the building or outside of the building, to find his way atop the Houston Texans organization. That's right. We're talking Easterby again. I am just curious, though, since we have an insider on the show, Jack Easterby is basically there, and the Texans swear he's not going to be the GM. But if he is running the coaching search with the owner, Cal McNair, I guess, how do you see that going? Is that going to be a problem for people who would maybe come into the organization, like, let's say, an Eric Bieniemy? Or do you think they might just avoid doing the whole thing anyways and just stick with Romeo? I'm sort of getting convinced that they're just going to try to do that.
I think that that's possible, and that's a fallback option for Houston right now. And I don't want to speak for anybody in particular. I mean, I know you mentioned Bieniemy. I don't know what Bieniemy thinks about the Texans building. But I do know that there are GM candidates who are a little wary of what's happening down there.
There you go.
And listen, part of that is because they look at it and go, where's my draft capital? O'Brien traded it all away. And now I got to come in and try to rebuild things. And I don't have those picks to start with. Whereas if you walk into the Jaguars building, got yourself a nice starting point there with all the picks that Dave Caldwell has compiled for that team. In addition to the draft capital, they're worried about, oh, wait a second. Is this the guy who overthrew the previous GM, and how much power is he going to have, and what kind of setup is this going to be? And while he's not the GM, is he going to have some influence over what happens here? So I know they're concerned in that regard, at least some candidates. And coaches would have the same questions. I don't want somebody looking over my shoulder when I'm trying to game plan during the week.
You think, let's say Doug Marrone, let's say most likely is not going to be a long-term guy there, beyond 2020. Correct me if I'm wrong. You have the Texans, obviously the Lions, the Falcons, the Jets, obviously is an obvious one. Which power rank those? What's like the best job out of all of these, you think? And conversely, what's the worst?
I assume you're talking coaching because you threw the Jets in there, right? We're talking just coaches?
Yes, just coaches.
Okay. What were my options again?
All right, Jaguars, Texans, Lions, Falcons, Jets.
Falcons, Jets. Coaching standpoint. I think you got to go Falcons, right? From a coaching standpoint. Because I think you can walk in and you can be successful with that team. And maybe you don't walk in. Maybe you just stay. Because maybe your name is Raheem Morris and you can show Arthur Blank and everybody else in Atlanta, including Rich McKay, that you got a good thing going. And why not give me a chance to do this for the long haul? So I would say this. Weeks ago, I did ask prospective GMs. I said, if you go into Atlanta right now, when Thomas Dimitroff was fired, if you go into Atlanta, what are you doing with the quarterback? And they said, it depends. Do I have a top three pick or do I not have a top three pick? And right now they're playing themselves out of a top pick. Mm. So that could lead to Matt Ryan staying. I still think he's got good football left. Now you're going in there and you're having him as your starting quarterback for the next couple of years, maybe, but you're also hatching a long-term plan as well. But I still like the fact that I've got Matt Ryan and Julio Jones and some other key pieces at least there that you can work with.
I'd ask you to know about another veteran quarterback, Matthew Stafford in Detroit. You know, there were whispers in a couple of past off seasons with the last regime that maybe they would go a cool quarterback in the draft. Maybe Matthew Stafford could be moved on some level. Is there a window or a scenario or a feeling inside their organization that Stafford could be on the way out? And that I look at a team like Ron Rivera, who seems unwilling to want to work with a young quarterback, but would love a veteran. And you can't just sell Alex Smith on us for another season. I don't think it's a nice story, but year two, some of that drips away. I mean, could Stafford wind up somewhere else in the mix of all these rookies being drafted and then some veterans moving?
Yeah, I think he could. And listen, the bloom is off some of these quarterbacks over the last couple of years. I'll throw Carson Wentz in there, even though I don't believe that you kind of quit on him at this point. And I at some point he may need a reset, whatever that means, new coaching staff or new location. But it's easy to sit there 1-2 years ago and say, boy, there really aren't that many openings. Look at how many quarterbacks are in a place that are playing well. And Sam Darnold was in there. Baker Mayfield, although he's played better now of late, and guys that we thought, oh boy, they're going to be there for 20 years. You know, some guys get off to fast starts and then all of a sudden, whether it's more tape or what happens around them, start to tail off a little bit. So yeah, I do think that there's an option out there at some point for Matthew Stafford. Now, the other question is, and I know, listen, if inject him with some truth serum, I think he will tell you that he feels like maybe it might be time to move on. But who's coming in as GM and who's coming in as the coach? Because that could change a lot for you. And all of a sudden, you got a different feel about the organization because of who is actually the coach. So, it's one that I'm kind of keeping tabs on. But to tell you right now if he's moving on, I got to see into the future to know what's going to happen to really make a call on that one.
You're saying a little like combo vaccine truth theorem. Just throw the truth serum, just mix it up into the vaccine.
So you just one needle.
I know that family is very upset. You know, they're going to be first in line to get that vaccine. They want to get out there.
So the COVID vaccine is going to need a booster. Would the truth serum also need a booster?
That's a good question.
I would just roll with the truth serum. You just put it right into the bloodstream and see what comes out of the mouth.
Stafford should just ruin all the goodwill he's built up and just be like, are you kidding me? I've been on the Lions for a decade plus and I've stayed quiet. Get me out of here.
I don't know that a lot of folks would argue with him.
Before we go, Mike, yes, we're talking vaccines. This is 2020. And it's taught us that you never know when you going to have another opportunity to do something. So I wanted to ask you a question I've always wanted to ask you. So here we go. Mike, how much does it bother you that more people mistakenly refer to you as Mike Garofalo than Janine is identified as Janine Garofalo? Be honest.
I feel like there's going to be a tipping point, right? Because I hate to speak negatively about the family, but has she done a lot lately? Is she still out there? I mean, I feel like I'm stacking wins here, right? I mean, I'm stacking.
You're active.
I'm mixing some losses in there. Take some L's, as they like to tell you on Twitter. But I feel like I'm stacking enough that there should be a tipping point.
Why hasn't it been yet? You're saying that more people are watching NFL Network than Reality Bites on Netflix. I'm not sure if that's true right now.
Really? Well, we're going to have to check with Netflix because I'm going to need to see views or streams or whatever they call them. Because I think I might challenge you on that one. I might throw the red flag on that one.
Wow. That's an optimistic look. I'm glad I got that question out, Mike.
That was a trenchant question by Dan there. Nice job.
Our international audience is like, who is Janine Garofalo?
See? Go watch the Larry Sanders Show on, I guess.
I'm huge overseas.
Yeah, that's true. Mike, you've come and you've said it all. We got smarter and we needed that. And that's what you do when you come on the show. And again, check out Mike. He's on NFL Network all the time. And also on Good Morning Football on the weekend with the great Connie Fox. Thank you, Mr. G.
Thank you guys for having me. And, you know, leave all your bad karma in 2020. That's my plan.
I would normally say see you at the Super Bowl, but probably not happening.
I haven't booked my ticket yet.
Who knows what's happening with that?
All right. There he goes.
Thank you.
The great Mike Garofalo checking in. What did we learn there? I went down a different wormhole, but I wanted to ask him about Will Fuller, who, of course, that news came out on Monday that Fuller, the Texans wide receiver, has enjoyed a big breakout season, and also cornerback Bradley Roby have been suspended 6 games for violating the NFL's policy on performance enhancing substances. That's unbelievable. I mean, it's what a bad year for the Texans all around, and terrible for Fuller, who, you know, we always knew he had talent. We talked about it on the show all the time, and the fact that he had realized that as a number one wide receiver this year, and now he gets suspended. I wonder what kind of market he has now. We'll find out, of course. But that was my other Texans thought. I don't think it'll affect
it. Just based on precedent, I just feel like NFL teams do not discount much for PEDs. They're just like, don't do it again. You know, if you're good.
He is
a free agent. That's sort of been the attitude.
If it's a player who never could stay healthy, then finally stays healthy for 3 months and then gets revealed to be on PEDs, I wonder if that's something that is a huge red flag. He's a guy I would absolutely take a chance on, because I think he's really, and we saw it on Thanksgiving when he went off. He is a real player, but that was, you know, a tough situation. Deshaun Watson is such a great quarterback, but now you take DeAndre Hopkins out of the mix. Will Fuller, it makes you feel like it's in doubt that
Kenny
they're going to
resign
him. Kenny
Stills, they waived.
They just cut Kenny Stills. Randall Cobb is hurt for a while. And Bradley Roby, by the way, is their number one cornerback by far. I would say that's two of their top six players. That, you know, it's kind of like, for instance, they're playing the Colts this week. Like, that looked like a dangerous game for the Colts. It's looking a little less
dangerous. Guess what? Though. More good news for the Miami Dolphins, though, who have the first round pick of the Houston Texans next spring. All right, anything else we want to hit on today's show? A little bit of a quicker show we have, just by way of schedule, because everything's funky. We'll have a mini pod tomorrow, Wednesday, recapping Steelers-Ravens, if it does indeed happen. And then on Friday, our regular Thursday preview show, pushed to Friday. So we'll have that show out to you Friday afternoon here in California. So follow all that. Mark, what are you going to do if indeed here in California the game is played at 12:40, Steelers-Ravens? What does a Mark Sessler Wednesday lunchtime football setup look like?
I kind of love stuff like this. I mean, I don't love why it's happening, but it is an impossibility to watch it in my house with the current vibe and activity. So I'll go into the garage. I got a television in there, sit in the easy chair and just, you know, watch a little Steelers-Ravens. I don't see what... It seems like a wonderful activity for the afternoon on a Wednesday. It's very unusual and kind of feels baseball-like almost. So I'm ready to experience it with a positive mindset for once.
And because of that, we also are getting another Tuesday game the next week.
Well, here's what I don't need. The triple header on Monday night where two games are happening at the same time.
That's
a bit
now.
Rich.
Well, they're not doing it now. They're pushing one of those to Tuesday so that the Steelers and the Washington football team gets their own Tuesday slot. I mean, it's a wild world. The 49ers today, you know, Godspeed to them. Hopefully they packed well. They are embarking on a 3-week minimum sojourn to Arizona, where they have decamped for December, because they're going to play in Glendale, a place with double the amount of coronavirus cases as Santa Clara. And to be clear, I am not criticizing Santa Clara for I actually think it's good.
Let the pro football teams play their games and end the season. Can we calm down with the preciousness of this?
It's not so much precious, but it's just like this is what happens when an entire country has absolutely no organization, that the one place, one of the only places in the country that takes it seriously and does a good job and is trying to actually prevent, you know, more people from dying, ends up just like, yeah, sending this team to somewhere where it's actually like there's more cases.
I thought it was notable that coming out of the win over the Rams, Kyle Shanahan went on a series of wild rants about this scenario and, you know, basically had to tell his players, you will not be spending Christmas with your families this year. I mean, so, you know, there is a life side to this and we just look at the teams. I'm kind of with Dan, like, with the NFL are the one group of people, even though they're being affected, where they put a pretty good clamp on this to some degree. Like, why are we shipping all of them to Arizona? I just let them play in California. But that's not my situation.
These are people that live and work in your region, and like you're saying, Greg, you're sending them to a place that's more dangerous to, I guess, take them.
I think
off
it,
your hands
it gets
and get
to
them out
a,
of your
a larger
hair.
Conversation.
It's like,
okay. It gets to a larger conversation that we don't need to have in this. And it's basically just how much is like a organization like the NFL need to feel responsible for the community at large. Now, when the laws don't really care too much about community spread, there's an argument like why should like a corporation care? But ultimately, like, we're kind of making the trade-off that we're trading a lot of people getting COVID by having, you know, football games, especially fans in football games, you know. And, like, we're kind of accepting that. And one county in the country is saying, no, we're not going to accept that. So it's
speaking of COVID-19, and obviously a global pandemic is a pretty good excuse, if you want to call that, Mark. But, you know, you've moved into your new home. You have this fancy garage setup that you mentioned here and there, not even a whiff of an invite since you've moved in. So I'll
send you a photo of it. It's not, you have the fancy garage. I mean, I have one seat in there for one person. So I'd be happy to have you over.
Did the old Zeuser in a private text say, Mark, if you want to, like, I put down carpet in my garage. If you want any help, I'd be happy to come over and, you know, make a day of it. Maybe it's time to open up, Mark, a little bit and get out of the
hermit
lair.
You know what? I think that like some other people that I've become a little too comfortable with seeing nobody and the idea of inviting people over and doing things, I just assumed not on the table. But we had a wonderful time socially distanced, you and I and Handsome Hank, covering Seahawks Cardinals. And I should take a cue from that I think we can.
I don't want to pressure you.
I also had a Corona scare, if you recall. I took a test there at one point, so I, you know, didn't want to. That would have not have been a high time to invite the gang over. Hey, I might have Corona. Come on over. Let's have cupcakes and
Corona cupcakes.
Yeah, see what happens to everyone. Roll the dice.
All right. Well, let me know. Maybe it's when we get the two shots. Maybe that's when it happens. But we're all waiting. Erica, you would like to see Mark's new house, right?
Yeah, we're all waiting, like you said.
Extreme enthusiasm.
I want to see the man cave. You have a new garage. You have your new little shed out back that we all want to see.
I don't have. There's no backdoor shed this time.
You got the shack?
No, you've inspired me. I will think of a way to get this done in the near future.
All right. But safety first.
Mm-hmm.
Always. Safety first. We care about that.
He's like, oh, way to pressure Mark during the pandemic, Dan. Shut up. Shut up. Not doing that. We're being safe. You don't see us missing shows because we have the coronavirus. It's because we're doing a good job.
Nope.
We're doing the right things. We're making the right decisions. Right, Greg?
We are. I mean, we're no Denver Broncos, you know? Sorry, they were the first one that came up. I mean, getting coronavirus is kind of a stamp of that you've been through this NFL season, unfortunately, if you're actually playing.
Incredible mask discipline, as they call it in the meeting rooms. All right, here at the Run the NFL podcast. We'll be back, like we said, mini pod personnel to be decided tomorrow, Ravens Steelers, Corona willing, and then we'll be back again on Friday with a full preview of week 13. We get into the teens. How about that, Mark?
I can't wait.
All right. Thank you to Mike Garofolo. This is Dan Hanza signing off for Quietstorm, the old boss, Ricky Hollywood, behind the virtual glass. Until Wednesday. We'll be right back.